The South Korean 3rd Division has advanced from 1 to 7 miles above the 38th parallel in North Korea. The South Koreans were ordered across the imaginary border into North Korea by General Walton Walker of the American 8th Army. The Korean Republicans are advancing toward the city of Yangyang, a road and rail center near the east coast of North Korea. American troops are within 11 miles of the 38th parallel. Major General Edward Almond, commander of the UN forces above Seoul, says he expects word very shortly to send American troops over the parallel. The South Koreans crossed into North Korea shortly before General MacArthur broadcast his surrender ultimatum to the Korean Reds. In China, the Chinese Communist Foreign Minister, Zhou Enlai, says his government will aid the North Koreans if American troops invade North Korea. The Chinese Communist leader did not say in what manner the Red Koreans would be aided, by arms or Chinese troops. The National Broadcasting Company presents transcribed the American Forum of the Air, founded 22 years ago by Theodore Granick and dedicated to the full and public discussion of all sides of all issues, coming to you from Washington, D.C. Before we present your moderator, here is a special announcement. We are pleased to announce that the New Jersey State Fair Committee, in celebration of its 205th anniversary at Trenton, New Jersey, has awarded the American Forum of the Air its Blue Ribbon Award as the most outstanding program of its type during the past year. This award is the result of careful study and survey and the unanimous selection of the New Jersey State Fair Committee. And now, Mr. Granick.
My staff joins me in grateful thanks to the New Jersey State Fair. The American Forum of the Air, now in its 22nd year, is still your program. And we at NBC shall continue to present all sides of all issues affecting every citizen. The current October issue of Reader's Digest, internationally famous magazine, carries to its 50 million readers throughout the world a vital and exciting article which concerns every freedom-loving person. It is entitled U.S. Military Policy 1950, written by one of the world's most renowned soldiers, General Omar N. Bradley, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In his Digest article, General Bradley states, and I quote, "We will protect and maintain our form of government and our way of life against any challenge and at any cost. By every means at our command, we seek peace. We will not provoke a war against anybody, and we will not wage a preventive war even against an arch enemy. But there is one price we will not pay, appeasement. Soldiers and civilians together," continues General Bradley, "we are agreed that world peace is an integral part of American peace." The American Forum of the Air, in cooperation with Reader's Digest, has invited two distinguished United States senators, both of whom play an important role toward the accomplishment of these objectives, to give us their views. They are Senator Stiles Bridges, Republican of New Hampshire, and Senator Lester C. Hunt, Democrat of Wyoming. Both are members of the Senate Armed Services Committee and of the Preparedness Subcommittee, successor to the War Investigating Committee of World War II. I regret that Senator Hunt has been a bit delayed, and we'll continue on with a question to Senator Bridges. Senator, the question uppermost in everyone's mind is, what should we do now that we're at the 38th parallel? Shall we cross it?
Well, Mr. Granite, I think that is a very timely question. And my answer to that is absolutely yes. We should cross the 38th parallel. We've gone through and had the experience, time after time, where our military forces have been successful, but through fear or favor, we have compromised our position by failing, for instance, to demand a corridor to Berlin or in many other different ways. And this time, I hope we're not going to reach the height of stupidity we have in the past, and that we're going forward across the 38th parallel until all of Korea is occupied.
I understand from the news ticker that Senator Austin has advocated that we remove or forget about the 38th parallel. What do you think of that suggestion?
Well, I think that's perhaps a step in the right direction. I'd like to be a little more positive about it, Mr. Granite, but I certainly think that's a step in the right direction. I certainly don't want to see a stop at the 38th parallel and then allow the communists to consolidate in North Korea and then have to maintain an army there for the next few decades during your lifetime and mine to keep them from crossing the 38th parallel again. I'd like to see this settled up.
Well, it's said that Korea would be indefensible against Russia. Aren't we worse off, therefore, the further we go in Korea, Senator?
No, sir, I don't. I think that we have, in this instance, as far as Korea is concerned, we called Russia's bluff. And I think that if Russia had been ready for a general war at this time, it would be started before now. And I think that our move into Korea was correct, and I think it should be followed through until the world got the most ultimate gain from it.
Senator, what do you consider the most significant thoughts expressed in the article by General Bradley?
Well, I was very interested, Mr. Granted, in a statement that he made here, and I quote, "The soldier can see the strategic perils that the civilian might readily overlook. The soldier, however, must not direct the civilian policy, but the civilian must never overcommit the soldier. We must never have a foreign policy that sends our armed forces to world tasks beyond their capabilities." I think that's a very significant statement, knowing how thoughtful General Bradley is and his great ability as a soldier, one of America's foremost soldiers, certainly of our generation. I think that paragraph says a mouthful.
Well, I understand your vote was recorded as against the confirmation of General Marshall as Secretary of Defense. Why, Senator Bridges?
Well, that's right, Mr. Granted. I'm glad you asked that question. I have a very high opinion of General Marshall personally. I have a very high opinion of the very wonderful record he made as Chief of Staff during the war. But I believe that the armed services of this country must be and should be headed up by a civilian. And one of the best authorities I have for that, Mr. Granted, is no other than George Marshall himself, because as a member of the Armed Services Committee, when we heard the unification bill, that was one of the strong points that General Marshall emphasized time and time again, was the necessity of civilian control over the military. And I would hate to see the day come, Mr. Granted, when we had the military in full control and full operation in this country. And it is not a personal reason as far as General Marshall is concerned, but one of principle with me.
Well, Senator, you feel that we've had a firm, forward-looking, acceptable foreign policy since World War II?
I think that as far as Europe is concerned, that we've proceeded in a reasonably sound way. I think that our foreign policy as far as the Far East is concerned, as far as China, as far as Asia, that it has been stumbling and far from successful.
I believe some of your colleagues called it a bipartisan foreign policy as a phony bipartisan foreign policy.
Well,
would you
care
to comment on that, Senator?
Mr. Granted, is this. I think that a bipartisan foreign policy to be truly bipartisan, then the minority party must be consulted while the policy is in the progress of making, not called in and advised what the decision is after the policy has been made. And I think there's a great distinction there. And may I point out that as far as I know, that in the last few years, there has been no member of the minority party called in, consulted, or their advice sought on the Asiatic or the Far Eastern policy. Now, it's true that on phases of the European policy, our advice has been sought. I can remember, as a member of the Armed Services Committee and Appropriations Committee, being called in, particularly on, for example, on the Greek-Turkey aid policy and so on the Marshall Plan and so-called and other things. But in Asia, or China, never.
Well, do you feel that our State Department has been somewhat committed to a policy of appeasement?
Yes, I do. I think that I have draw quite an issue with the State Department, by and large, because I think that even while the war was still in progress, World War II, we were laying the foundations, or supposedly laying the foundations for peace. We were actually in a far way to starting a grand appeasement program with Russia. It's interesting to note in the new book just issued on Jimmy Burns that there's considerable difference of opinion between Mr. Burns and the President, apparently, as to who formulated the policy of appeasement during the period, at least, that he was in there. But that's a little late in its analysis.
Well, if we're committed to that policy to which you refer, what assurances do the American people have that we'll do all in our power to effect a sound military policy to combat communism?
Well, I think that first of all, in order to have a sound military policy, we must know what our foreign policy is. And as far as I know...
What is our foreign policy?
As far as I know, no one knows. And up to a few minutes ago, I don't think anyone very high in the armed services have been told just what our foreign policy is, what they're going to be expected to commit ourselves to. In other words, I think that the issue is very clear. On one hand, we have Russia, and Russia and communism, which is a great brute force in the world against America, which must be the leader of the free countries. And I think it is not only our job to contain communism, but to stop it. And therefore, I would, instead of conducting a policy of appeasement or a policy of wishful waiting, or as Mr. Acheson said, in China, we let the dust settle. I don't think that's American. I don't think that's American to wait and see. I think the American tradition calls for action, positive action. And I'd go out here and aggressively take steps. And where we've taken, Mr. Granite, aggressive steps, such as we took in Greece and Turkey, such as we took in Korea, they've paid off.
Well, is there any danger of the United States attempting to extinguish these various fires, dangerous fires started by the communists? Won't that weaken our European and American defenses?
Well, I think this, that we can't spread ourselves too thin militarily all over the world. We've got to pick and choose our places. But let me say, Mr. Granite, that I think it's very essential that we know the overall program, our overall commitments, and then formulate a definite program in that direction.
I just noticed that Senator Hunt's colleague, Senator Omani of Wyoming, is here. I wonder if we can invite him up to the platform to discuss our military policy 1950. Hello, Senator.
Well, Ted, you've always been so gracious. I can hardly resist an invitation from you, particularly when you have our distinguished colleague from New Hampshire here.
Senator, we're right in the midst of discussing our foreign policy and our military policy, particularly relating to the article by General Bradley. What are your thoughts about our military policy?
Well, our military policy, of course, is primarily one of defense. The United States, as one of the most powerful nations in the United Nations, is now engaged in a tremendously important campaign of leading the world to peace. And to do that successfully, we must be prepared with a strong military power in the air, on the sea, and on the land. But we must never give way to any temptation to use any such powers for aggressive warfare. Senator, we are trying to prevent aggression.
Senator Bridges has said that the policy of the State Department has been one that of appeasement. What do you think, Senator Omani?
No, I don't agree with that.
I just said, Senator Omani, that it was one of appeasement, certainly, in many respects. I concurred with the policy, for instance, in certain respects in Europe, but while I differed completely in the Far East and in Asia.
Well, I can understand, because I've heard you talk on numerous occasions, but nevertheless, I feel that what has been done in Europe and in Asia has been based largely upon an estimate of what the capacity of the American people is to perform. We can't be expected to send armies of occupation to Asia as well as to Europe. We've had our military forces in Germany because we were the most powerful factor in winning the victory there.
You're opposed then, Senator Omani, that if the communists move in a place like Indochina or the Philippines to us moving in at all?
No, I want the United Nations to move in. I want the responsibility is upon the United States, upon the United Nations, because unless we succeed in linking together the free nations of the world to resist aggression, we shall be, in my judgment, assuming an almost insuperable task, an almost impossible task, I should say, if we were to attempt to throw our boys into every fight on the perimeter of the area on which Russia occupies a certain point.
But let me say that to date, it has been largely the United States and it's been who has been performing for the United Nations, and it's been largely American boys that have been fighting. It's been largely American boys that have been dying. And I want to see if this United Nations is to work successfully, and I am a strong supporter of it, more than lip service given us and applause given us when we get into any future action. I want some real tangible aid.
That was the objective of the North Atlantic Pact. And I think the conferences of the ministers of the three most powerful nations in the Atlantic Pact gives us reason to believe that Great Britain and France will arm to resist communist aggression in Europe. Our main point, it seems to me, is to concentrate upon the fact that communist aggression is the danger which we face. This is really a fight for the survival of freedom.
Senator Bridges suggested that we ought to cross the 38th parallel. How do you feel about that?
Well, I sent a wire to Secretary Acheson and to Senator Warren G. Austin on Saturday, urging that we should not be a party to permitting the communists to drop the Iron Curtain upon the 38th parallel. That 38th parallel is just an imaginary line. It has no significance at all. It's an imaginary line. It's not mythical. It's a line that is set down by the geographers. But it has no significance in the age-long history of Korea. Korea is a single nation, and in my judgment, it ought to be admitted to the United Nations as a single nation after real elections have been held.
I'm delighted, Senator Marnie, that you've taken that position, because I feel very strongly about it, too.
May I take a question from the audience? Go ahead, sir.
I'm Joseph Q. Tuck, District Manager with State Farm Insurance Companies. I have a question for Senator Bridges. Do you favor the United Nations forces stopping with the liberation of all of Korea, or should they go on to liberate Manchuria as well?
Well, at this time, I would stop with the liberation of all Korea, because that is the point at issue. But as I've indicated before in my remarks here, I certainly don't believe in just a static position for this country. I believe in not only containing communism, but stopping it. But in this instance, as far as Korea is concerned, I would complete the conquest of Korea, but I wouldn't be looking for new fields to conquer at that time.
May I say a word, Senator?
We want to thank you, Senator, for pinch-hitting at this last moment. I've been quite worried for the last few minutes, and was I happy to see you walk into the studio.
Senator, you just used the phrase, completing the conquest of Korea. I'm sure you don't mean that. The United Nations is not engaged in any program of conquest. We are merely disarming the communist aggressors who use the Iron Curtain of the 38th parallel for the purpose of preparing an absolutely unwarranted attack upon South Korea.
Perhaps you phrased it better than I did, but we mean the same thing.
I think so.
Another question. Go ahead, ma'am.
I am Shirley Green, employee at the Woodruff and Lothar Clark. And I have a question for Senator Bridges. If all hostilities cease at this time, will it be necessary to continue drafting men?
I think, yes, that one of the things that I'm fearful of, I'm very happy at the victory in Korea. The only worry that I have, and I would guess perhaps Senator Marnie would agree with me on this, that I hope that it doesn't mean a letdown in our preparedness program here in the United States, for I feel very strongly that we've got to build our strength here, and part of the strength is the necessary manpower, and I would feel that it would be necessary unless we get the volunteers to continue the drafting of men.
Senator Marnie, would you care to comment on that?
I think the people of the United States must make up their minds that if they want to live in a free world, it will be essential for them to pay the price of living in a free world, and that price is merely a willingness to bear the burden of taxation that will enable us to maintain the military prowess that is needed. I have no hesitation in saying that the American economy, in my opinion, is strong enough when in cooperation with Western Europe to do this job. But we must do it.
Another question. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Merritt Ackland of San Gabriel, California. I'm regional director for State Farm Insurance Companies. Question, does the East-West Germany dispute seem to be running a smoother course? Since Korea, we've heard less and less before this very explosive issue.
Do you want to take that, Senator Armani?
Senator Armani, excuse me.
Well, in my opinion, the Soviet policy has never been to start a war in which the United States would be involved. They have been trying to bluff us out. They tried it in Berlin. The Berlin airlift, which was conducted by our Air Force, utterly upset their plans, and they changed their plans. They accepted the situation as it was developed. They're accepting the situation, I think, in Korea. It must be remembered that when our forces were down in that little area within less than 75 miles of Pusan, almost pushed into the sea, the Russians, if they had permitted the Chinese communists to go in, or if they themselves had gone in, could have won a great victory. They didn't do it. And the reason that they didn't do it, in my opinion, is because they have a fundamental belief that capitalism is through and that a capitalistic nation like ours is too greedy and too selfish and too short-sighted to take the economic steps that are necessary to preserve the freedom for which we all stand.
Senator Bridges.
I think they're mistaken.
I think that I agree generally with Senator Armani on that question. I think that you'll hear more about the East-West problem now with the let-up of the Korea situation.
Another question. Go ahead, sir.
I'm Henry Keller, Jr., Director of Agency Training for the State Farm Insurance Companies. This question is directed at Senator Bridges. What, in your opinion, is the best way to build our armed forces? That is, by draft, universal military training, or some other combination means?
I think you may have to have a combination of both, but I certainly would place, I'm for universal military training. I've been for it when it's been very unpopular in this country. And I think that the American Legion, nationally today, is advocating a very sound program in urging the enactment of universal military training. And I hope that we will have that in force in this country for a long-range program. I think it may be the answer to our manpower situation, and it may be one of the answers in deterring Russia or any communist aggressor from moving when she knows that we have the trained manpower. And that, and also from the point of view of the young man, the boy or the young man, or the boy's parents, I think also, they'd like to feel that their son or their brother or their husband, whatever it happened to be, had the benefit of a thorough training program before he was called upon to serve actively his country in action.
Senator Armani.
I don't think of our policy in the future as being one of military might alone. I'm for universal military training, true. I'm for raising the forces of the Army and the Navy and the Air Force to the strength that we need. But I am deeply convinced that our success in this effort to preserve freedom will be gained right here at home by the conviction among our own people that the time has come to stand together in defense of the fundamentals of Americanism, to forget all the petty little divisive issues that so frequently arise, and stand here together to demonstrate to all the world that a free economy is the best economy, that it produces the highest standard of living for the masses of the people, and that it can produce the most stable standard of living.
Well,
when we do that here, we're going to be able to show the communists that they are all wrong in their concept of what the future world is to be.
Mr. Granite, hearing Senator Armani's remarks here, in which I concur, he sounds like a good Republican.
I'm now, sounding like a real Democrat.
If he would vote the way he's talking now along Republican lines, we might achieve that here in this country.
Time for summary. Senator Bridges, will you sum up, please?
In my judgment, Mr. Granite and Senator Omani, we're in a battle for survival. We didn't ask for this situation. We're in it by necessity today. The last 3 months have proved beyond any argument that Russia is out for conquest. We can no longer contain communism. Now, as General Bradley has said so ably, we must contest communism. Our thinking has got to be straight and sharp, because Russia knows exactly what she wants, and exactly how to go about in getting it, and exactly how far to go. And our soldiers and our nation must be ready. But our government must be prepared here at home, and, or in other words, our home front must be kept sound and solid. And in the next few months or years...
I'm sorry, Senator Bridges. Senator Omani, would you sum up?
Let me first...
Still pinch hitting for Senator Hunt.
Let me first say that I have noticed that whenever Republicans hear Democratic doctrine stated clearly, they always claim it to be Republican doctrine. The ideas which I have been setting forth here, strictly speaking, are American ideas. They're American ideas of individual freedom, of peace and liberty for all mankind. We need armed forces. We need strong armed forces in order to prevent our ideals from being liquidated from within or from without. But we must always bear in mind that we shall win this great objective of universal peace and freedom, not by force that we will wreak against another, but by example, which we shall set here, that we do not seek conquest anywhere in the world, but we will use our powers to remain free.
Thank you, gentlemen. You have been listening to a discussion in U.S. Military Policy 1950. Our speakers have been Senator Stiles Bridges, Republican of New Hampshire, and Senator Joseph C. Omani, Democrat of Wyoming, who pinch-hitted for his colleague, Senator Hunt.